But we begin with the Marion County Juvenile Court, the Marion County Juvenile Detention Center. Judge Marilyn Moores has been the judge of juvenile court now for almost a decade. Boy, time flies when you're having fun. She's here in our studios along with a new member of the juvenile court family, and that is Charles Parkins. He has been here in Indiana for 7, 8, 9 months, a little bit longer. Came here from Florida, discovered there's snow.
Sorry about that.
In Indiana, and he has brought some unique things to the juvenile detention center, including the third guest that we have in the studio, who will be very, very quiet. The first time we have had a four-legged guest on the program. I know some of you think there have been some guests in the past 10 years that should have been four-legged.
Just remember, I only have two horns, people, but still two legs.
But Bentley is here, and we'll find out why Bentley is a part of the therapy that is being done at the Marion County Juvenile Detention Center. Judge Marilyn Moores, welcome. Charles Parkins, welcome. And because they are officers of the court.
They cannot.
Licensed in Indiana as opposed to one other person that's in here. They'll be more than happy to take your calls at 239-1310, 239-1310, or you can send me a text message at 37890, keyword Amos, or an email at praiseindy.com. However, they cannot comment on any active cases or cases on appeal because I'm not getting in trouble with
the
Chief Justice.
It is called the Rules of Professional Conduct.
No, it's also called, I don't want the Chief Justice to come up in here and hit me upside the head. And with that, we welcome Judge Marilyn Moores. It's always good to see you. And Charles Parkins, welcome to Indianapolis.
Thank you.
So, Judge, what attracted you and the staff of the Marion County Juvenile Court to bring Charles Parkins to Indiana?
Well, first of all, was his very impressive resume mm-hmm. and his innovative ideas. We really want programming for our kids. We want things that are going to help them get educational skills, life skills, employability skills, things that help. We don't want to just warehouse children. Mm-hmm. And he has a long history of doing that in other communities, and he has started it here. We were thrilled.
Charles Parkins, you came here from Florida. You had spent some time in Palm Beach County, you know, running their juvenile detention center, and then spent a number of years in the northern part of the state near the Panhandle. What is it, Alachua County?
Alachua.
I was close.
Gainesville, University of Florida.
So near Gainesville.
Yeah, in Gainesville.
Gainesville. Sir. So what were the types of things that you did there? What brought you here?
So I moved from Alachua down to West Palm Beach mm-hmm. to run a larger center. I was asked to go down there and move mm-hmm. Several times. Right. And through the course of being there, it's under a state. The Florida Department of Juvenile Justice is a state-operated system. Okay. I found the opening that was here and applied for it, mm-hmm. came up and interviewed and really liked the center. I got to speak with the staff, the kids, see what programs they already had in place. So I was really intrigued of the county-based operations versus the state-operated centers that I'd worked in the past. Mm-hmm. So there's a lot of autonomy that could be done in terms of programming and developing new programs.
So when it comes to your theory of juvenile corrections, juvenile justice, what university do you come from? I know for some people it's, you know, it's rehabilitation. There's another school of thought that says, oh, well, they want to help some juveniles. There's just some people who are just incorrigible. You know, they're not going to change. What philosophy do you bring to juvie corrections?
Well, you know, the juvenile detention center is focused on housing those kids while they're going through the court process. So average length of stay is right around 15 days. So, there's only so much you can do with kids in 15 days. But at the same time, you want to do everything you can. So, you know, we provide the services that are needed for kids. We're able to almost triage and assess kids to see what we can do for, you know, a continuity of care kind of philosophy after they leave. Mm-hmm. But in terms of kids coming into detention, most of them are there for making just bad decisions. You know, we do have a small population of kids who are reoccurring, who come back often. So, I mean, those kids you have to deal with a little bit differently. But, I mean, there's a correctional attitude to the facility because we are a detention center. You know, we're housing people who aren't there voluntarily. And but at the same time, I think it's really our job to provide those programming and skills and just trying to do something for the kids while we have them.
What has been the biggest difference in terms of the young people that are housed in the juvenile detention center here and the problems they may bring from the streets, the problems they may bring from home versus the young people that you dealt with in Florida?
The biggest difference, I would think, is probably Alachua versus Alachua. Indianapolis, mm-hmm. as opposed to West Palm Beach. West Palm Beach is very similar in terms of it's one county worth of facility.
Right.
It's the largest county in Florida, but so it's a huge, diverse population in terms mm-hmm. of cultures that are coming together. But it's really just one group. Alachua mm-hmm. is 12 counties of kids housed with one facility. So that actually kind of helped manage the facility.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Indianapolis, a lot of our kids come from the same neighborhood, so we have those neighborhood rifts that we have to consider when placing kids in the center. So,
is that also that one of the things you have to deal with is if they're kids coming from the same neighborhoods, they may be people that are in different organizations, a.k.a. gangs. That's a problem in adult jail. That's a major problem in adult jails across the country. How do you deal with that here? And was that a problem in Alachua County, Florida?
It was a problem in all those places. You always have those kids. You may have a kid who is locked up for a charge now, but a previous offense, maybe the other kid that's in there with him was a victim. So, mm-hmm. I mean, you have to look at those, and you don't always know those
right.
situations when the kids walk in the door. So the staff are very good at identifying. They know the kids. We're able to classify them and place them where they're safe. As soon as we hear of an issue that may potentially arise to something that would create some conflict in the right. center, we separate the kids. I would say the best piece here that allows us to separate is just the number of living units. And we have 8, 9 living units where we can really separate kids, and that mm-hmm. helps us. The facilities that I ran in Florida usually had 3 or 4.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't have the ability to really separate the kids there as we do here. But on the other side, we could also ship them off to other detention centers if there were major issues that we needed to separate kids from.
So, Your Honor, let me ask you, as you've dealt with the juvenile justice system, how the nature of the offenses that kids have committed, how has that changed? Because you always hear the stories, back in my day, we settled our differences with, our fists, and then you dust yourself off. Now, as we see daily in the newspaper, people are pick up a gun and, exercise their Second Amendment rights at each other.
I would have to say that the gun offenses are the biggest. And kids and guns are just a bad combination, because I think back on myself as a 15 or a 16-year-old kid.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't have much impulse control.
Mm-hmm.
Knew it all.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't you, when you were 15 or 16?
Some people say I'd like that at 42.
Not going there. But, but the problem is there's no backing up when a deadly weapon is involved.
Mm-hmm.
It's a danger to the kids themselves. It's a danger to other people. It's a danger to the community. It's a danger to the schools, and trying to track where these kids get these guns, because I wouldn't have known where to go find the kind of weapons that these kids come up with.
These are not zip guns.
No, sir, they are not.
These are heavy weapons.
They are. They are 40 calibers. They're 9mm, and so they're easy to conceal and. It's a shame. We know kids make bad decisions sometimes. It's their job.
Mm-hmm.
That's how you learn. You screw up and you learn. But if it ends in a fatality, there's no backing up.
One of the things I think listeners need to understand, and this has been part of what you have done since you have been in charge of the juvenile court system here in Marion County. Basically, the young men and young ladies that are in Charles Parkins' facility, these are the ones charged with real serious crimes. These aren't the ones that threw the snowball at the window of the school or egged. This isn't Justin Bieber just egging the neighbor's house. The ones that are staying there have been charged with more serious crimes. So I think there's some people in the community that still think if you throw a rock at your neighbor's house, you're going to juvenile.
No, and thank you for pointing that out. It's a huge difference. When I arrived there, we have a 144-bed facility.
Mm-hmm.
There were regularly close to 200 children in mm-hmm. that facility.
Mm-hmm.
some as young as eight. Mm. Eight-year-olds are second graders. They believe in the Easter Bunny and Santa Claus. And detention is simply not appropriate there. We engaged with the Annie E. Casey Foundation in the Juvenile Detention Alternatives Initiative, JDI. And what we did is look at the law. When all else fails, read the law. And the law says kids can be detained if they are a danger to others, to the community, themselves, or if they are at risk of not showing up to court. Mm-hmm. Honking off an adult is not a basis for detaining a kid. Mm-hmm. And so we got the community together. And when I say the community, I mean we tried to round up as many stakeholders as we could, neighborhood organizations, faith-based community, prosecutor, defense, probation, to sit down and say, all right, what things really pose a risk? What kinds of offenses? And we developed a risk assessment instrument. Right. And if you peg the risk assessment instrument, and a very good way to do that is to have a gun, that would be the basis for being detained. Mm-hmm. But if you threw a snowball, are you a danger to yourself or others or at risk for not coming to court? No, you're a knucklehead. We don't incarcerate knuckleheads and or detain them.
239-1310. Before I go to the callers, I do want to mention that we have this. This is the quietest guest we've ever had in going on 11 years. In Bentley, and people are going to say, well, if he's got a dog in there with him, is he disabled? No, this is part of the therapy or the treatment that you do. Right. Why animals? Because when this kind of first came up, some people called, and among African Americans of a certain generation, dogs and us, it raises some images of Birmingham.
It's not a Doberman.
Well, this is picture rave. Bentley is A, and why is he? What is the thing with animals? It's called a therapy dog.
Yeah, it's called animal assisted therapy.
Animal assisted
therapy. It could be any. It could be a bunny rabbit. Okay. To be quite honest with you, I mean, it just provides some therapeutic service to someone. Bentley is a certified therapy dog. He was a rescue from Florida that I rescued to bring in and start a pilot project in the detention center I was working in.
Okay.
We quickly moved up here shortly after that, and we just incorporated into it here. Mm-hmm. So kids can put in requests to see Bentley. Mm-hmm. They get to spend 10, 15 minutes with him.
So he's a superstar over there.
Oh, yeah. He gets lots of requests. You know, it was funny. And the way it came about is we were taking kids who just really seemed like they were having some trouble adjusting. Kids with autism, kids that just weren't really opening up. Getting them in there, they're petting the dog, they start talking, and then we're able to kind of interact with the kids a little better. And then I started getting requests. There were already requests in place to see the superintendent. And there was a place where on the form where it said other, and then the kids were riding the dog. Bentley. They want to come see the dog. Oh, okay. And I just kept getting the requests.
Request.
Okay.
We have things to talk over.
With the dog?
With the dog.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
he has an official Marion County Juvenile Court badge.
He does.
He does.
He does. It helps get them around a little easier when we're coming in and out of the city county building.
But if you think about it, I know there are like some hospitals that use animal therapy to help patients recover quicker, as part of their therapeutic treatment. So it only makes sense that if it works for patients in the hospital, there's something about kids and animals that actually do work.
And we do volunteer work with Pause and Think Incorporated, which is a local nonprofit that just deals with therapy dogs. Bentley has been to some of the public schools to engage in the reading programs with kids there, and we've been to some of their other public events with Pause and Think.
He's going to be as popular as Blue from Butler? Is that
he's better looking than Blue.
He's better looking than Blue. 239-1310. 239-1310, the folks from the Marion County Juvenile Court, Judge Marilyn Moores, and Charles Parkins, the director of the Juvenile Detention Center. Let's start today with Anonymous. Hi there. Anonymous.
Hey, Anonymous, you there? Going once, going twice.
Sorry. Okay.
Come on.
Had the mute on.
Come on, Anonymous. That's you. What's up?
Okay. I'm just a little bit disheartened. I am not knocking the program that you are implementing at all. I am a teacher, and I am all for whatever works for our kids because there is something that needs to happen, especially with them being detained at the center. However, I used to also be a volunteer at the center, and I was wondering if you guys will still be implementing such programs like the Man Up Conference, the Grooming of Queens, things of those that nature that actually, in my opinion, from what I was able to see, really made a true difference with the students. I mean, you're talking about young girls who are sexually active and doing God knows what, and after being exposed to that program, coming back to help mentor other girls who are in that program. Men in the Men Up Conference who were out in the streets in gangs, quote-unquote, doing all kinds of things, coming back to mentor young men, and also the fact that they were coming back and helping save other lives. So what are you guys planning to do? Because from what I understand, your volunteer coordinator is no longer there. And it's just kind of disheartening because you're talking about a program implementing animals when a lot of these students, their issues are not to – their issues, it's not with an animal. Their issues needs to start somewhere else. So what exactly are you guys planning to do to help tackle that with the, quote-unquote, 15 days that they are detained there?
All right, great question. Charles Parkins.
Yeah, we recently lost our volunteer coordinator. She had moved on to mm-hmm. other things. But, you know, over the course of the years, she has developed probably the largest volunteer group that I've ever seen in a detention center. We're talking close to 800 volunteers coming out, performing a variety of different events, some of which were mentioned, the mm-hmm. Man Up Conference, mm-hmm. Grooming of the Queens. We have no intention of stopping any of those or changing that. The animal-assisted therapy is just one small piece that we incorporate in addition to the other wonderful programs that we have in place. We have recently advertised for getting a new volunteer coordinator. Yes, correct.
Have you sent notes out to those 800 volunteers? I'm sure somewhere there's a database of who, you know, of contact information to simply say, hey, we're in the process of looking for a new volunteer coordinator. You know anybody? You know, send the information. Hang tough. Hold on. We know your interest in it. Thank you very much. And we'll get back to you because, you know, even though this is the 11th largest city in the country, this is a big, small town.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And people may say, wait a minute, this on the calendar, they're supposed to be doing this in the juvenile center. They're not. There's a new guy there. It's the first time many in the community are hearing you and hearing your voice, and they're probably going, "What are they doing? They're trying to change over there? Or what?" Have you all contacted the volunteers?
Yeah, we've been in contact with some of the main groups of volunteers. I mean, mm-hmm. that 800 is not just 800 individuals coming out;
okay.
but it's groups of people who come out. So to let them know that, you know, we're interested in continuing as we have, and we have a wonderful volunteer program. I would like to see it grow and more. Our volunteer coordinator and I are still in contact, our former one,
mm-hmm.
and she still wants to come back and help with some of those okay. larger conferences that that we've done in the past. I mean, they're hugely successful. One of my first involvements in the center as I got there was being able to see the Grooming of the Queen. So mm-hmm. that happened shortly after I got there this past year.
Right.
And that was just, I mean, it just blew me away. It was a fantastic event. I couldn't imagine us not doing that.
Well, and you can help us get the word out today, Amos, that we are looking for a volunteer coordinator, somebody who has a heart for kids. And the person to contact is Donna, D-A-W-N-A, Peterson. She is the human resources person at Juvie. And
what's Donna's number? Here's the big test for the – I tell you what, hold on. And during the break, Judge is going to find the number. And then when we come back from the break, we'll tell everybody where the number is, 239-1310.
Right. So see, a job, ladies and gentlemen. Right here, right there.
A job.
A job.
A job.
Waiting for somebody.
Waiting for somebody.
As long as you got the skills to do it.
They didn't know. They're just now hearing it for the first time. 239-1310. 239-1310. Aaron and Anonymous, hold on. We'll get to you. We'll take a break. We'll be back with more. Joe Donnelly coming up on Monday. We'll be live on President's Day. We'll be live at Harry and Izzy's downtown.
Ooh.
By the way, get the prime rib pizza. It is delicious.
The prime rib pizza.
It's delicious and to die for.
They're supposed to feed me. So.
And the duck pizza is really good, too.
The duck?
Yes.
No. That's the dynasty thing. I'm not doing that. 239-1310. More after these. With the folks at the Marion County Juvenile Detention Center, they're looking for a volunteer coordinator. If you think you can handle that, and you love, most importantly,
you gotta like kids,
and you gotta be able, you know, to want to work with kids and help, you know, turn them around, make them move forward. Get a hold of Donna Peterson in HR at the Juvenile Center, 327-8792, 327-8792. What's that number again, Bentley? 327-8792. See, Bentley, you didn't know that Bentley sounded exactly like me. Back to the phones. And Aaron, hi there.
Yeah, hello.
Hi, you're on the air. What's up?
I was calling to see, I am a yellow cab taxi driver, and I was trying to see, do you think that the juveniles need to have a stiffer penalty to put the word out that, you know, this is not, because I'm talking about the Ricardo shooting.
Yeah.
But not only that, I actually deal with a lot of juveniles transporting them from Boys and Girls Club and back home because of their conditional release or however that goes.
Mercy.
And I find myself talking to them, and they ask a lot of questions about how it works and is it true, do you really have a lot of money. They like, have lack of knowledge of the job that we do, and I just wonder, like, you know, I don't want to make them, you know, stereotype them, but sometimes they do get in the car, and I do have that mind, like, do I need to watch them, or how do I, you know, how can I let them know that it's not cool to, you know, to go about
that's a that's
way.
A great question. So are taxi drivers used to transport juveniles, and why would they be used for that, Judge?
Because we have evening reporting centers. Okay. It's one of our alternatives for detention, and the kids, our evening reporting centers are all at Boys and Girls Clubs,
mm-hmm.
so because we want to connect kids to pro-social activities.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the conditions for that was be able to have transportation, because most of our kids don't. We have a lot of parents that work second shift,
okay.
so the kid, there's nobody to take the kid to and from,
mm-hmm.
and we want them to be safe. So they've contracted with the cab companies. Sir, my heart goes out to you and the loss of your colleague who was killed. I think cab drivers are some of the bravest guys I've ever met.
But you know, cab drivers have great wisdom.
Yes, they
and
do.
And has there been any thought, if you're providing that service, maybe, you know, get the cab drivers together, just like we get the cab drivers together to, you know, do hospitality and say nice things about Indianapolis when they're picking people up at the airport, to be able to, when they're driving that kid back, and if the kid wants to talk, that driver kind of knows how to make contact. Does that make sense to you, Aaron?
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
That's a great idea.
That's a great idea.
He's writing that down.
Write it down.
I appreciate it, Aaron. Thank you. Let me go to another anonymous at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hello.
Hi.
With all the different programs we have for the children, what programs do we have in place for the parents?
Oh.
And you bring up a really interesting question, because Judge Wars and I, we've had this conversation a couple of times over the telephone, and the one thing I've always kind of wondered is, when we talk about, you know, juvenile corrections and whether it's just the transfer while they're in holding to sentencing, the question always comes up in this program and other multiple forums is, where are the parents? How do we hold parents accountable? So, Your Honor, do we need to lock parents up in the cell next to the kids? You know, the family that serves time together stays together.
Well, the whole goal would be to have nobody locked up, but we are in the process right now of. Of course, we see two different kinds of cases. We see the children in need of services. And on that side of the house, there have always been lots of services for parents. But we now have all those same services on the delinquency side.
Mm-hmm.
We are developing a parent engagement program as we speak to have an orientation that, A, tells parents, notice that it says in re Johnny Jr.
In the reference, in the matter of.
You are a party as well. And you have an accountability. Because we have parents who say, well, I'm not the one that got in trouble. It was little Johnny.
But no. they're still responsible.
It's called your, if my dog bites somebody, I'm on the hook.
But here's the other thing, Judge, that this frustration has come up over the years. The parent who's tried everything, and Johnny or Jane is incorrigible. I think that's and the parent wants to throw up their hands and say, I can't handle them anymore. I've talked to parents that just want to bring them down and leave them at 25th and Keystone and say, here, y'all got them. It seems that do we have programs and services now? If there's somebody listening that has tried everything legal to turn their kids around, to train them up in the way they should go, and they're resisting, what does that parent do? Do they just wait for the kid to commit an offense and then Charles Parkins is looking at them? Or is there help for those parents and grandparents?
There yes, there is help. The Neighborhood Alliance for Child Safety, NACS. And I don't know the number off the top of my head, but the Department of Child Services contracts with a number of service providers, counselors.
And that's the Neighborhood Alliance for?
Child Safety.
Child Safety.
Mm-hmm. NACS. And they, and I apologize that I don't know the number off the top of my head, but they have all kinds of referrals and for free services to help families. And we make, because God loves some of these parents, they call us. They are at their wit's end. Mm-hmm. I get that. Not every kid is a perfect kid. But we also see a lot of parents who, and many of these are folks who became parents at an age that I wouldn't have made a very good parent at 15. And a lot of them became parents at 15. And so there are issues where... Now the kid's 15, the parent's 30, and the being the kid's friend didn't turn out so well, and now they want to pull rank, and that's a tough transition.
Neighborhood Alliance for Child Safety is through the Children's Bureau, and they looks like they have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 locations in different parts of the city. 239-1310, 239-1310, let me go back to the phones, and another anonymous. Hi there. Anonymous, yes. You're on the air.
Okay, I was calling to see what is the plans to create a safer environment for the children and the staff?
At the Juvenile Detention Center.
Correct.
So now, what is the deal here, Charles Parkins? Because people were calling me and saying the place was off the hook, staff was getting beat up, you had rogue people taking it over.
They were saying the place was turned into Attica, 1960.
You know, and I thought it was Brubaker, one of those late-night cable movies. What's going on? Bentley couldn't handle the deal, or what?
Bentley was able to stave some of them off.
But very seriously, I mean, the reports got extremely serious. And, you know, we mentioned it on this program. We tweeted it out. And then finally, I think the mainstream news media, well, like Amos was talking about, we better go over there and find out. So what happened?
We had two kids that did a majority of what you
They were like one-man wrecking crews.
Yeah, I mean, it was repeatedly
two.
With two kids.
Two.
Let me tell you, one kid can make a big difference in a detention center in terms of behavior.
How? Because people listening are going, wait a minute, they're locked up. It's kids. You got less than 140. How can one kid just walk in there and just all heck break loose?
You ever been in a classroom?
I've been in a classroom.
It only takes just one disruptive element.
It's not even that. Even if you take a kid and you put him in a room by himself, I mean, you're still going to have to open that door and feed him and shower.
No, you don't.
He has rights. And, you know, if they're so inclined to hit every single person that tries to come in that room, you know, to take care of their needs, then you're going to have issues.
You can't restrain them?
You can, but you can only restrain them for so long. Mm-hmm. And then what do you do with them after they're restrained? You can't leave them in restraints, you know, mechanical restraints. You can't just leave them there. They have to come out of it.
Did you have that in Florida or
sure.
or two, you know, Floridian, you know, bad A Floridians could just walk in and tear up your place?
Oh, sure. Yeah, I mean, one kid could make a total difference in the facility in terms of behavior for all the other kids, to be quite honest with you. I mean, one starts, another one may join in. I mean, it makes a big difference.
Now, this sounds like a really weird question. In juvenile detention, not necessarily corrections, you know, how long can you keep a kid in, quote-unquote, solitary confinement or isolation? You know, if once again, as you do your risk assessment, you know, are they a danger to themselves? Are they a danger, you know, to other children and or adults?
Well, the national average for holding a kid in isolation or seclusion or confinement, however you want to call it, is around 6 hours.
So it's not like adult jail where mm-hmm. you can put somebody in isolation like for a long time.
That's another penalty in the box. You know, it's not Cool Hand Luke.
Well, years ago, in addition to having the overcrowdedness, you also had other issues going on. That resulted in a federal consent decree in the facility.
Right.
One of the quickest things that will get you there is having a kid in isolation for a long period of time. I mean, you need to be able to document that you're taking care of the needs of the kid. If he's so out of control that he needs to be in isolation for many, many days, then there needs to be additional services provided to that kid, mental health services, to really to get down to what is the root of the problem. Now, it could be that they're just choosing to be to engage in chaotic behavior, and you get that from time to time. It's not often. that you get somebody who is so out of control.
There were no lockdowns. The rumor mill got a hold of this, and you know,
we had two kids. Yeah, if you know there was another issue that compounded this, and it all happened about the same time. So this would have been right following Thanksgiving Day weekend.
That's when we started, yeah.
That this happened. So there was another thing that we think also contributed to that, and which was that we hosted a Thanksgiving lunch. Mm-hmm. We invited all the parents of all the kids to come out and have Thanksgiving with their child who was in detention. And we had 14 kids have parents show up out of the 80-something kids that were incarcerated. Mm-hmm. So – and most of the kids did a really, really good job of, you know, saying, you know, my mom's busy. She's cooking. We have a big family. Right. She's not going to be able to make it. But, you know, they take it to heart. Mm-hmm. So – you know, the days following that, we saw some more escalated behavior. So we had the same thing happen at Christmas time where we had 11 kids.
Holidays are hard on kids.
It's a really tough time of the year. But at the same time, I don't know if you're familiar with the layout of the facility. Yeah. The learning center, the school portion of it.
Which is IPS, yeah.
Right. We have several classrooms, but they're all in one general area. So we had, at the same time, a large group of kids that were kind of at each other. We talked about this at the beginning of the show. And so in order to keep additional incidents from happening, we provided those educational services for the kids.
Move the kids
units.
into the eight units instead of the one classroom.
Exactly. I mean, and so that was the proposed lockdown that they talked about. But it was really just moving services to other places. There's plenty of detention centers in Indiana that don't have schools where they provide all services on the kids' living units. I mean, it doesn't mean they're locked in rooms.
Speaking of the – and I know IPS provides the educational services for the kids that are there. Are the schools, whether it's IPS or a charter or townships, are they good at providing the updated lessons so these young people can keep up with their studies? Are there some schools, that you have to get at, to make sure that at least the learning opportunity is there and continuous?
Education is always a real stickler and a real difficult piece for kids in detention because in this area, it's actually a little easier because you're not engaging with different school districts. It's usually all the kids are from IPS or were at one point in time. So kids have educational assessments usually within the first 24 to 72 hours, depending on when they come in, what day of the week. Mm-hmm. So we can figure out where they're at. Are they in school? Are they expelled? Are they suspended? What school do they go to? Have their records transferred over? Do they have an IEP? Do we need to provide special ed services? So there's a lot that goes into just determining where the kid's at within the first few days that they're there and then providing those services to them. So the teachers have a tough job there because, you know, you'll have a classroom full of kids, but they're not all going to be in the same grade.
Right.
So, you know, if you have an English classroom, you're going to have a varying spectrum of grade levels that you have to provide education
to. Could be from freshmen.
So it has to be a little bit more individualized.
Sometimes when new leadership comes to the top, there's shuffling of staff. How much turnover has occurred and has the diversity in the management staff at the juvenile detention center been disrupted? And when I say disrupted, there are people that are concerned that the number of minorities, of people of color who are in your management staff is down drastically than, say, 2 or 3 years ago.
Well, I mean, there's only like four people on the management team. So, I mean, one person can obviously make a 25% change in the diversity. In terms of turnover of the staff, the largest portion of our employees are youth managers, 70 youth
direct
managers,
care staff,
which are direct care staff who work with the kids. So we see a majority of our turnover in youth management positions, and it's a majority of people who are coming in. I mean, we have many vacancies that we have now. I mean, we talk about jobs that are available. Youth manager jobs are almost always available at the detention center.
And Donna Peterson's the person
she's still about that, too.
Right. So, look, there's another job opening.
And so, wait a minute. So, of the four managers, how many are African-American?
One.
Okay. Is that less, Judge, than it was before?
I believe it is by one person.
Okay.
I might be wrong, but I believe it is.
Two.
Just less by two. All right, 239-1310, 239-1310, back to the phones. And Anonymous, hi there.
Hi.
Hi.
I just wanted to say that this new program with teaching life skills and such like that sounds like a wonderful idea and is another example of the types of reforms and changes that have occurred under Judge Moore's watch. When Mitch Daniels had a rare moment of lucidity here almost a decade ago and tapped Judge Moore's with the promise of, I'm sure, real high pay and real short hours, we had quite a mess going on over in on 25th and Keystone.
And the Justice Department agreed.
and in the state in general. But she has worked tirelessly in implementing some the most dramatic changes that you could ever imagine. There was an MIT study that said that a change in any kind of system, such as like juvenile justice system or the foster care system, such, right. Those kind of changes in those systems generally take 50 years, if ever, to see any kind of change. And the amount of changes that have happened in under a decade is remarkable. And I just want to applaud. I know she didn't do it on her own, but I also know that she is behind a lot of these things, way behind the scenes, and is a champion for all of this stuff.
Well, I will agree, caller, with everything you said, except about Mitch Daniels' rare moment of lucidity. I think the governor has had plenty of them during his tenure running Indiana.
All right,
well, that's a whole other subject.
I can tell you, yeah, the snow has addled his brain today. I appreciate it. Let me go to Concerned Volunteer at 239-1310. Hi there.
Hey there. Good afternoon, Amos.
Good afternoon.
Hey, I wanted to ask, actually voice some concerns that I do have. I've been listening to your program, mm-hmm. and as a volunteer of the center, I'm concerned, number one, because as long as Mr. Parkins has been in his position, I have not seen where he has had a meeting or has not even reached out to the volunteers. He seems to be invisible in his role as a superintendent, in which the previous superintendent, we had lots of dealings, interaction. We had an opportunity to see what his vision was for the center. And since Mr. Parkins has been there, we have not seen any of the above. And also, when it comes to the safety of the center, you know, they mentioned that two individuals caused most of the trouble, but those individuals had long been gone from the center. And you're still having some of these same issues. You're having some of the same violence. One thing I've noticed as a volunteer is that the students, they come in, they're not as disciplined as they once used to be. They're cussing where they used to not be able to cuss. They are, when it comes to just walking in the hallways, they were quiet. You never heard a peep out of them. And now it seems like all of the discipline has been changed. And I want to know if there's changes that Mr. Parkins has instituted that has affected the discipline that the children are just getting, just regular discipline. Because I think that's attributing to the staff that's being attacked. And once again, those individuals have been gone for a while, and you're still having the same issues. You're having code blues at record numbers. You're having lots of issues since his tenure that we did not have previously. And as we know that the center has just gotten off of, you know, a few years ago, the Department of Justice list, mm-hmm. it seems like some of the changes that have been made are about to put them right back on that list.
Is there a different standard of discipline today than when the volunteer, you know, indicated, you know, he was in there and it seemed like the kids were quieter, no cussing?
You know, we changed the behavior management system there to make it a little easier. The previous behavior management system had six levels that you had to be in the center for a variety of period in between the levels. So you meant 5 days for this level, then 5 days for that level until you got to the level six, where that was the honor level and you had more privileges. Mm-hmm. The average length of stay, as I said earlier, is about 15 days. But mm-hmm. under the previous behavior management system, you would have to have been there for nearly 30 days in order to reach the other level. So mm-hmm. we had a small portion of kids that were reaching the highest level of behavior. Mm-hmm. The new system is three levels, 5 days in between each. So, you know, it makes sense that every kid would realistically have the opportunity to reach the highest level of behavior and get the most rewards for reaching that behavior. Additional visitation times, you know, more phone calls, commissary, you know, things that the kids want to engage in. But you know, one of the main focuses that we've had and that we will continue to struggle with in trying to maintain is reducing the amount of time that kids are spending in isolation and seclusion. I mean, the ACLU put out a report in November saying that isolating kids for long periods of time causes, you know, developmental issues, psychological issues. You know, the risk of suicide is much greater when kids are locked in rooms, especially during behavioral confinement issues. So, I mean, those are huge travesties that could potentially happen. I mean, a suicide is something that we want to make sure we never experience, if at all possible. So, but we have kids. We had kids with issues. I don't want to talk about the previous administration because I didn't know them. Mm-hmm. But I do know that we're working to move those isolation days down in terms to get it to a reasonable number. We're also engaging with PBS, performance-based standards, to provide some objective ways of looking at conditions in detention centers. So we have some measurable outcomes that we're going to be working towards. In terms of kids' behavior, I mean, it varies from day to day, from kid to kid. But whenever you change a system, there's going to be some, you know, a moment of chaos. Right. Not chaos, but, I mean, it's a changing system. People don't know what they're going to do. Moving through the hallways is a really good example. The policy that was in place when I arrived was that kids moved through the hallways with their hands behind their back. And when they stopped, they had to put their chin to their chest and look at the ground. Mm-hmm. Yeah, my philosophy is if we're telling kids they need to keep their heads up, that we shouldn't have a policy that tells them to put them down. Mm-hmm. So by allowing them to put their heads up and look forward but remain quiet, mm-hmm. you know, it caused a bit of an issue with, you know, many staff that didn't want to see that policy change. They felt that that, you know, would negatively impact the kids. But to be quite honest with you, I mean, it's a respect issue. You treat kids like humans. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't treat them like animals. You treat them like humans. And you'd be respectful for them. You will get that respect back tenfold. But at the same time, there's going to be some issues. Yeah. They're still kids. They're not in there for following rules.
But going back to also what the caller said in terms of the communication, in other words, the volunteers are extra eyes and ears out into the community. Yes. And the fact that you were hired, and there was no press, and no disrespect to you, but there was no press release sent. No, you know, announcement, hey, there's somebody new, there's a new person at the Juvenile Detention Center. No effort really to have the community see or hear you until after there were these reports of what happened after Thanksgiving. And then there was a story in the Star, and then you have been on television. Now you're here. So there has been this void of the community knowing, you know, what's going on at the juvenile detention center. And when there is a void and a vacuum, all kind of things rush into a vacuum. And one of the things I want to ask before I go to the break, the majority of residents at the juvenile detention center for many, many years has been African American. That's just the nature of the beast. In where you have been before, were you in facilities where the majority of the residents were African American?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. So you've had experience being able to be like Andrew Luck or Peyton Manning, to be able to have that experience with Usen, as we call her, you know, on the show, Usen.
Well, first of all, to be able to read the defense. Well, first of all, not all Usen act the exact same way. So let's just make that perfectly clear.
I would say bad Usen make Rob the same way.
I would say that there's good Usen, then there's bad Usen, and then there's class Usen. So let's just make that clear distinction if we could.
No, we're talking about the Usens that's in his facility.
Yeah, those are my cousins.
Yeah. Oh, the Usens in his facility. Are your cousins. Judge Moores.
I just want to apologize. The communication lapse was really mine, and here's what happened. Mm-hmm. Judges have to run for re-election, mm-hmm. and I got a little sidetracked trying to do what I needed to do to deal with issues within my party.
There were some people in her party who could not appreciate her service in Afghanistan and a few other places, and thought she just spent more time going down to township dinners and pressing the flesh as opposed to serving her country.
Those are not real Republicans, especially if they're going to disrespect a member of our National Guard who served our country. But that's
why it's slating that was all taken care of.
That was all taken care of.
But she's on the dime, so right. She can't talk politics, but I can.
Well, all I want to say is I was a little distracted and very involved, and I forgot one of the most important things, and that is communication with our community. Mm-hmm. We welcome the community's involvement. We want the community's involvement. The most positive thing we can do for our kids is to connect them with the community. And I've apologized to the City County Council because the Public Safety Committee has been unbelievably supportive and helpful with our efforts, as have you. Mm-hmm. And I hope you will, again, agree to come out and do a radio show from
Now that Bentley is the star, we got to go. I may have to bring Chris. Because Chris never goes out. Let's work on that. Chris is the one. He's never been out there.
As long as you have cake, Chris will be there.
Yeah. Chris will be there. We'll take a break. 239-1310. 239-1310. We'll come back with our remaining moments with the folks in the Marion County Juvenile Detention Center and Bentley. Bentley done gone to sleep.
Oh,
hey,
man.
Bentley, you should listen when Jocelyn Adande's on here. That's going to hurt your ears.
We'll be back with more after these. Back to the phones and Councilman Oliver. Duke, how you doing?
How you doing, Amos?
Fine.
I heard you'd have your guests on there today, and I look forward to this moment. Listen, how you doing, Judge?
It's great to hear your voice, Duke.
Yes,
thanks for calling.
I just want to let the community know once again that you've been a great asset to our community and run the Juvenile Justice Center over there.
You're so
kind. I just want to express that shout-out to you that I want them all to know that I've been on public safety since before you came on, and you made a great improvement over there, and we hope that that continues, and we're sure of that.
Thank you so much. The council and you and Vern have been such good partners with us. It makes all the difference in the world. We appreciate your support so much.
Yes, and I want the listeners to know that you give an update to a report to the Criminal Justice Safety Committee annually about the operation of the center over there, and we're thankful for that. And I want the public to know that we have some oversight, and we do take rumors and all those kind of things that I've already talked to you about, and that you addressed those today, and I'm thankful for that. But one more important thing, Your Honor, that I would like to just curiosity, and I just don't know anything about it, and that is the use of, I've seen more and more use of animal, in this case, horses even, but pets in therapeutic situations that you're using over there. I've seen them where they've, the nursing homes, rehabs, hospitals, jails, higher institutions of incarceration, this type of humanity, I guess they say, that happened. Is there any tracking there as to those that are touched or involved in these type of therapeutic sessions and they carry on when they're released? And I'm going to hang up, but I
thought
the
question.
Last time that I sent over there, certainly not a hotel, but a lot of our detainees over there, I won't say enjoying it, but I was told they were tempted to call you your mom because they come. They're having a better situation there than they have perhaps on the outside. And that's not to because you make it too comfortable over there, but certainly the human part of reformation is something that all of us in the community benefit from.
All right,
I'm going to hang up, and I hope you can answer the question about
the
therapeuticness of anything that takes the attention away from the person but on another object. Thank you, ma'am, for all that you do. Thank you, Counselor.
Charles Parkins.
You know, one of the things that we find in kids that is very difficult to teach, you know, is empathy.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's just really no good programming for it. But, you know, we're doing pre and post surveys with the kids right now who are engaging in our Pause and Think program and our Youth Canine program. So, you know, we're looking at that to see if we can see any statistical changes over the behaviors. How are they impacting the kids? Mm-hmm. So we are looking at that. And then I recently reached out to the OJJDP, Office of Juvenile Justice Delinquency Prevention, to see
That is a federal program,
to see, you know, what it would take to be recognized as one of their programs.
Mm-hmm.
So I've gotten that information back, and, you know, it will have to be published. And there's a lot to it to get the program itself recognized.
And there actually is a lot of empirical data studies about the use of animals in – you know, incarceration, corrections, therapy, their impact on inmates as well as staff. So there's a bunch of data out there. I just don't think it's ever been done here in Indianapolis.
All right, 239-1310. Back to the phones and Anonymous. Hi there. Hello, you're on the air.
Okay, hello. How are you doing?
I'm fine. What's up?
I'm calling about to you and the host. I'm just curious to know, and your guest, what do you determine a kid or a child, I mean, is it, do you determine it as a middle school or high school? Because you have a lot of people out here committing crimes, teenagers in middle school, and I would consider them as young adults. And that being said, it seems to me that determined on the judicial system, you know, it seems like to me that they would have harsher punishments because, you know, it seems like the same crimes are being committed over and over again.
What is the dividing line between a crime committed by someone under 18 that's considered a juvenile crime and an adult crime? Who makes that call?
Well, first of all, the legislature makes that call mm-hmm. in the lion's share of the cases, with the exception of murder and some other specifically named crimes. If you're under 18, you are a juvenile, mm-hmm. and so you go through the juvenile justice system. For certain kids, if you commit are alleged to have committed murder and you're 16, you're automatically in adult court.
Mm-hmm.
You are a direct file. If you're 15 and you are alleged to have committed murder, and we have a kid in detention right now, you saw the arrest earlier this week,
mm-hmm.
now the prosecutor files a petition to waive juvenile jurisdiction.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to decide whether it's in the child's and the community's.
Because you operate under the burden is what is in the best interest of the child. In adult court, it is prove it beyond a reasonable doubt.
It is a different standard. And in this case, public safety gets weighed. It's whether this kid can benefit from the juvenile system. And, you know, now the legislature passed a statute.
And I was going to ask you about the criminal justice reform we're going through right now and the rewrite of House Bill 1006, and actually about to go through maybe like the second, like a modification.
Mm-hmm.
How does that impact, you know, the juvenile system that both you folks go into?
Well, this is kind of a precursor that was done right before that, but it works into it. Now, even a kid who gets waived, let's mm-hmm. say this 15-year-old gets waived,
mm-hmm.
the legislature has allowed because, okay, he's going to serve his time in a juvenile DOC facility just for sheer safety.
Even if he's convicted
and found
or hypothetical, somebody 15 commits a heinous crime, they're tried as an adult.
If they're
found guilty, they're not going to Michigan City.
No, they're not, because it's not safe for that kid, and it's a huge liability for the Department of Corrections.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes those kids, they may have been just scary as hell as a 15-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
But by 18, the lights come on, they've gotten mental health treatment or whatever it is. It allows now the criminal court judge
mm-hmm.
who found him guilty to look at that kid again when they're 18.
That's part of the new changing yes. of the rules of the game.
Yes.
Is there a misperception that the community sees all of these crimes committed by persons under 18 and they want the adult book thrown at them and they don't understand it is a separate system?
It's a completely separate system, and the entire philosophy and the law underlying juvenile court is rehabilitation. It's mm-hmm. not punish.
Mm-hmm.
And don't get me wrong, I completely understand. For the guy who's had his garage broken into for the 15th time or had it tagged by artistic kids with spray paint –
They want them under the jailhouse.
Darn tootin'. And I get that. But we have to think strategically and long-term for our community. We can't keep throwing kids away.
But one of the questions, Your Honor, that I always kind of wonder is when you have a juvenile who commits the heinous crime, i.e. murder, they are now 18, they have not demonstrated that they're ready to be back in society, where do they go?
Then they go to the adult system on their 18th birthday. Once they look at that, then they would go to adult DOC.
And a kid who is convicted in juvenile of a crime serves their sentence in juvenile. When they become 24 years old, can the employer find out that they were convicted in juvenile?
Yes. In many cases, they can. It depends. The legislature has specified what they can find and what they can't.
Does the second chance law allow, after a certain period, for juvenile records to be shielded from employers?
It sure does. And I hope that, that the community will be very much aware of that. We're going to try sometime soon to have a seminar at 37 Place over by our
which is the
court.
Community center right next to the court, right?
Yes, to specifically for juveniles or now adults who had juvenile records that are weighing them down to look at it. We will provide the forms.
I got two more questions, callers in our remaining moments. Let me go to Jeff right quick. Hi, Jeff.
Hello.
Hi. Fine. You got about a minute, Jeff.
Okay. Two things. I just wanted to address the judges on the panel for the juvenile center. Do you have proactive or reactive redevelopment programs administrated like by professionals in behavioral sciences that assess these kids, these incarcerated kids or young adults, or even non-incarcerated kids or young adults, for specific programs that would help them individually? Or do you, like, have a one-size-fits-all redevelopment program?
That's a,
what works for one wouldn't work for everybody.
That's a great question. Do the programs that try to turn kids around, because it's got – remember, this is – juvenile is under 18. Is it one-size-fits-all, or do you try to figure out the needs and develop, or is it just such a short time, Charles Parkins, that they're with you, you really don't have time to do that?
You know, we work hand in hand with the probation department, who really kind of handles that piece. But I do know that they do have assessment tools that they use to really identify weaknesses, strengths, you know, where kids may have some positive factors that may help them and negative factors that may, you know, influence them in the wrong way. So that will help steer the recommendations that probation would give to the court in that kid's case.
Let me go to Tanya right quick at 239-1310. Hi there.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'd like to know specifically, how can the community help you serve our children?
Yeah, go ahead, Charles.
I think it's a great question. You know, one of the things I was talking to Judge Moores about before we got here was some programs that I did in other facilities where we actually had panels of kids who spoke to certain community groups to really kind of bridge that gap. And we had issues in Gainesville where we had a black-on-black task force that really was looking to reduce the amount of violence that was in the community. Mm-hmm. And, you know, we were able to connect them with the kids that were from the community. See a kid who had just gotten there, maybe a kid who had come in several times to see what the burdens were for the kid to be successful. You know, what barriers did those kids have? And it was a great time. You know, it's funny when you listen to kids, because they have lots of people who talk to them. Mm-hmm. But when you listen to them talk.
You're a big believer in listening to kids.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. It changes behavior just to listen. Because that's not something the kids are really used to. So we're able to change that up. You listen to the kids. You figure out what their specific issues and needs are in the community. Because I think as adults, sometimes we make assumptions that kids need things that they don't need at all. And this is one of the programs that we would like to institute here as well.
Judge Moores, I don't want to put you on the spot, and if you duck the question, I will understand. But you mentioned earlier about 37 Place, the school is right next to the juvenile facility. And as much as I'm sure that you would like a brand new spiffy court facility and all kinds of new technology, and Charles Parkins would like a new spread out juvenile detention center, what is your view or any concern about this proposal to take all of our jails and all of our criminal court facilities, including juvenile, and move them to one central location?
Well, I think that having the criminal courts and the jail co-located is a great idea. Mm-hmm. It's safer for inmates. It's safer for other folks. And as a community, we need to recognize the cost savings. But my personal philosophy, although I think this is a situation that should be decided by the community, not by one judge, is juvenile court is jurisdictionally separate, and it's physically separate from the criminal courts for a reason. If we put juvenile court with the criminal courts, what are we telling kids about their future trajectory? I think that they're
– Or here's your future staring at you if you don't turn around and get your act together.
I can tell you that carrots work better than sticks with kids. And I was raised by a guy who definitely believed in the spare the rod, spoil the child. But
You're also saying that a lot of the people that come through your court live in 46218, 46201, 46203, basically in that cluster on the east side from the highway over to Emerson, from 38th all the way down to Raymond Street.
And we are now collecting data about how people arrive at our court so that we can have a better idea. I mean, I've asked for bike racks because we have folks who ride their bikes. You can't ride your bike to the airport. I have concerns about the transportation. I have concerns about and we're more of a community court, and we'd like to stay that way.
One final thing. Somebody, you know, mentioned, hey, would they like to do a program like Scared Straight on A&E? No. Charles Parker, you're saying no. Now, there are people that still remember Scared Straight. But you say no. Why?
Statistically, it's proven that it doesn't influence behaviors of kids. I mean, you walk a kid through the detention center now, he's not going to be scared. They're going to see kids in school. You're going to see kids getting treatment. You're going to see kids maybe getting their teeth cleaned by a dentist, seeing the nurse. You're going to see
hanging with Bentley. It ain't jail. It's jail, but it's not jail. Right.
I mean, the detention center itself is not a scary place. Mm-hmm. You know, the scary part of the process for the kids is the fact that they are, you know, not at home.
Yeah.
And they don't have their phones.
Right. They don't have those luxuries.
No, and no Xbox.
Right. But, I mean, in itself, we still have to provide services.
Charles Parkins, he is the director of the Juvenile Detention Center. You came here when?
May 6th.
May 6th. Nobody knew. He just popped in from Florida.
Just here to do a job.
That was bad.
Huh?
Yeah, that was bad.
Now you're in a big time. Again, welcome.
Thank
Bentley,
you.
Welcome.
Make sure that dog gets like three dog biscuit treats.
Bentley, and Judge Marilyn Moore, it's always good to see you. Thanks very, very much.
Good to see you.